It's the Raven and the Blues on BFBS Radio 2. It was almost a year ago in the Fighting Cocks in Kingston, which is about 4 or 5 miles away from where we are today, that I saw this band for the first time. They were support to a band out of Estonia called Bullfrog Brown, and we featured many times. And over the last 10 months, we featured the Cedars many times as well. It's been spoken about. Jason and I have been sort of emailing intermittently. It's like being like a relationship almost, trying to get this set up, getting all four of you here, but we've got you here at last. It seems to have been an amazing year, has it?
Yeah, it's been good. We've had a lot of kind people do get us on festivals and great gigs.
Yeah, it was an amazing summer. We managed to do just about every festival, it seemed, there was going. Which was really good, because I think it brings you together as a band. Not that we needed that anyway, but it makes you feel a bit like you're on tour, which is quite a nice feeling.
Yeah. Because the furrow that you tread, the musical style which you tread, is very different from mainstream. As we speak now, there are millions of kids in bedrooms with airbrushes trying to be sort of Girls Aloud and things, you know. But your musical style really is very different, and is much more difficult for people to sort of absorb and accept, or it would seem that way. But I've seen you now, and it seems that you seem to touch all bases when you play.
Yeah, I think on paper we look like the kind of band who would either be very niche or very that we wouldn't particularly have mainstream appeal, but we've played gigs to people who perhaps haven't come down to see us, and we just, I don't know, we do seem to transcend whatever generic barriers there may be, I think.
Yeah, it's been quite, we got to play a little slot in Reading, 2006, was it?
Was that when you were a duo?
No, we were full band then, yeah. And we were playing quite early in the day. It must be about, I don't know, half one or something,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, still daylight.
Yeah, and we kind of did a set, and all the people were just waking up from their tents, and when we finished before we finished our gig, we saw these real young kids dancing. That's 16, 17, with those hairstyles you were talking about before. And
I believe they were wearing bikinis.
two young ladies were wearing bikinis dancing around. So that was really good to see. Like, having something that is maybe seems as a traditional bass, but because we're not, none of us here already have a history I don't have any major historical link to blues or countries. This is something I've picked up as I've gone on the way, and maybe
we're kind
that's
of accidental tourists in this.
Yeah, band. So I think maybe that shows through the music, and we're not trying to be traditionalists or anything like that, and we just wear what we wear, and we're not wearing cowboy hats, and we're not wearing, you know, anything like that. I think that
like
helps.
I'd like to wear a cowboy hat.
Well, yeah, cowboy hats are good. Don't get me wrong, but but yeah, it's not what we don't try to be something that we see that we should be should be looking like. We just play what we play, and we wear what we wear. We don't try to be something we're not, I suppose.
We'll come to why and how you play what you play, and how you came together. After we hear something from you, what are we going to start with?
I think Heart of Rags.
Shall we start with Heart of Rags?
Yeah, Heart of Rags.
You were swinging down the street, you were making some noise, knock about singing with your whiskey boys, and you took me by the hand with my red boots on, saying I'm gonna show you where we truly belong. Well, baby, you got a heart of rags, scraps hanging down from the tree. You rolled right up from the dirty street, and you wrapped your ragged hands over me. Took me dancing downtown to the 12-bar blues. Pistols in your pockets and buckles on your shoes, and you led me right up through the hotel door. Laid me on the bed and made me a whore. Well, baby, you got a heart of rags, scraps hanging down from the tree. You rolled right up from the dirty street, and you wrapped your ragged hands over me. With your buckskin swagger and your pool hall smile, God knows the devil never goes out of style. But darling, you'll be sorry when judgment comes down. You swap your shuffle shackles and a thorny crown. Well, baby, you got a heart of rice, scraps hanging down from the tree. You're rolled right up from the dirty street, and you wrapped your ragged hands over me. Well, baby, you got a heart of rice, scraps hanging down from the tree. You're rolled right up from the dirty street, and you wrapped your ragged hands over me.
Heart of Rags, which, if I remember rightly, was I heard on that first set back to the Fighting Cocks.
Yeah, it would have, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a staple for a long time.
It's about as bluesy as we get, I think.
Now, yeah, that's probably as bluesy as we get, I think.
Jason and Chantal, you came together, first of all, as a duo, and had, what, a couple of years together like that?
Yeah, 2004, mid-2004 until the end of 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And then end of 2005, Pedro and Steve joined us.
And you came together because of a common love of the kind of music you're doing now. What brought you together? I mean, you didn't advertise on Melody Maker, did you?
No. Well, although we didn't find each other through such a different means. I was looking for a band to sing with. I can't write music, so I couldn't kind of contribute anything other than lyrics and vocals. And I was using a website called musiciansweb.co.uk, which is very good. Well, it was very good at the time. I can't speak for it now. And Jason was using the same thing because he had been with a band that had sort of disintegrated. And I think we'd both been through various hopeless situations, you know, with bands that just weren't going to work. And we were both each other's kind of last chance before I give this up for a bad idea.
That's how I felt, yeah.
But when we met, Jason had brought his laptop, which had music on it, and he played me some stuff that he'd done with his previous band. And I really liked it. It was just sort of, by far and away, the best thing that I'd heard of anything that I'd been trying out for, and I thought it was something that I could work with.
It's funny because that actual music wasn't what we ended up playing at all. It was that was kind of your, I don't know, it was kind of a blues rock, if you like, very basic on that kind of level. But when we ended up playing, it kind of just led itself because I'd picked up a guitar and I had an old song that I'd had from a long time ago, and then there was a Tom Waits song that I quite liked, and we just started playing around with them, and it just clicked. And what I was playing then, or certainly writing then, has got nothing to do with what we're doing now, but it was quite nice that it was a big departure. And I certainly haven't been playing the style of guitar that I'm playing now isn't anything like I was playing previous to 2005. I think it's developed in its own way because of the songwriting, which has been very nice.
So after almost 2 years, I mean, Chantal is now a wilting violet. I mean, when she's on stage, she kind of dominates. So what was it that made you want to fill the stage out with some more people?
I think it was more accessible, I think, to have more people on. So it got us into, well, I thought it would get us into more opportunities to play. Mm. That was quite a big thing. Because at the time, I was, when we were doing demos and things like that, I was playing the bass and a bit of the guitar, and a friend of mine was playing drums, and it was kind of always an idea to have it as a full band. It wasn't just us as a duo necessarily, although we both really liked things like Gillian Welsh and that's always worked very well as a duo, but I think there was kind of more in store, I think. I certainly felt.
I think it makes the music more three-dimensional, you know, and that's sort of sonically why it's important. Yeah, it just sounds fuller, I think, more full of life.
I think Stephen and Pedro, when they joined, I've been friends with them for quite a few years before I'd met Chantal.
Oh, so they weren't strangers?
No, I'd know them, and it wasn't. I was kind of thinking, who are we going to find, you know, to play bass and drums? And Stephen didn't have a kit, and
He barely has a kit now.
Yeah, he barely has a kit. Yeah. And
we better explain that we picked the band up. You know, in these days of, I was reading this week, I forget who it was, but somebody took the complete floor of Claridge's for their entourage. And at one end of the music business, you travel high on the hog. At the other end, the Cedars come by train, and it's a wide ranging business. But the drum kit actually fits inside, well, an ordinary suitcase almost. It's amazing. It may be small, but it's perfectly formed.
It is indeed. Yeah, but they've brought so much to the music. When we were playing, and when we first set out, first kind of practiced together, you could feel that the dynamic changes. Mm-hmm. So even if our writing style changes all the time, we'll either write as a full band or maybe it's just Chantal meeting together. There's no like fixed formula, but even if it is Chantal and I meeting together and we do a small idea for a song, when we bring it to Steve and Pedro, when we all play in a room together, you know, it moves on from there. It doesn't stay like it was. They really add. It's added a lot to the music.
Chantal said that at one stage that she wasn't a songwriter. What you are now because of the being part of the group. Is that right?
I think I mean that I'm not a composer. I can't write music. Mm-hmm. So I don't really think of myself in a musician as the same way that I think an instrumentalist should and does. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean I think any less of what I do. But mm-hmm. I think. You have to be quite clear that it's a different thing. And I couldn't do it on my own, but to be honest, I like the fact that it's a small community of like-minded people. I also think the other important thing about there being four of us is if there are two people writing and you have a disagreement or you get stuck, you are stuck because you're just going to bounce back off each other. With two other people, they can go, oh, but, you know, what about this? And then that's pretty good because it breaks a stalemate. Sometimes it's another good dynamic.
So we'd be quite lucky as well when we write. We don't labour on writing. You know if it's going to work straight away. I think most of our songs, I mean, we've got, I don't know, over 20 odd songs now, and I think almost all of them have been sit down and play for 10-15 minutes, and if the song's not there, it's not going to be there pretty much. I think for the most part it's like that. So
yeah, I think we're quite brutal.
If we I think the song we just played, Heart of Rags, that was written in Chantal's bedroom. We just sat down, we recorded on a mobile phone, had a little idea for it, and it was done, and that was it. And it hasn't really changed from then. I think most of our songs like that.
How close are we to getting an album which you're going to be able to sell over the edge of the sea?
The big saga. We're hoping to record next year in March in the States. I think we were talking on the phone about it. And we've been desperately trying to find a recording situation that suits us, which is being difficult. It's not so much the space necessarily, it's the people that we work with that have, I don't know if experience is the right word, but it might also be experience, but also the touch with working with acoustic and
the
live.
Empathy and the whole thing, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had unlimited funds and lots of time, you could just wander around the studios of probably the east coast of the USA and find one. But, yeah, but it's not that easy. Though,
well, we've had very... we've been very lucky that I contacted a guy who's produced Randy Jack Elliott's last album and in Brennan, and the idea is that he's going to help us basically record the album. It's not set in stone yet, but it's pretty much there. And we have a plan to go over in March and do 3 days in San Francisco, I think, and then mix with another guy who mixed Ramley Jack Elliott stuff in LA. So it's quite low budget from the point of view of it's not amazing studios, but that's not really what's important. Yeah. I think it's the space.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we don't need an amazing studio. We need amazing people.
We need a nice room that feels good and that we're all comfortable playing in. Because you know, we essentially play live, and we want to be in the same room, be looking at each other when we play. Pretty much how we are here.
The idea of being boothed up to record is just it's just not going to work for us. Mm. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it for a particular kind of sound, but for the way that we are, it just doesn't work. We've tried it and it doesn't work, you know.
What should we have musically next?
Well, I think Choke Chain, which is an a cappella.
We have a little a cappella, but I might need you to give me my starting note because I started too high the last time I played this and it was a bad idea.
Was it bad?
Probably.
Well, this is quite a good indication of what the an instrument, the vocal, is actually, although... Chantal says, she doesn't necessarily feel like a song, a music writer, but the vocal is another instrument for us, I think. And when we're playing on stage, everything feels like an equal footing. We don't want the guitar louder than everything else. We don't want the voice louder. Everything needs to be its own thing, which is, I think this is a very good a good measure of that, a good indication of what an instrument of voice is.
I burnt your letters, I burnt your clothes, I'd burn your bones if they were still in my hands to hold. And I'm going boldly with all the lies you told me. In a bag I'm gonna leave by the side of the road. Black dog, you blame me for your lifetime's pain, but I'm not your keeper, and my love was not a choke chain. I don't want no comfort, I don't want no cheer, I don't want no devil whispering in my ear. I'll keep my heart in my fist, I'll keep my axe in my hand. If you come near me, I'll cut you down where you stand. Black dog, you blame me for your lifetime's pain, but I'm not your keeper, and my love was not a choke chain. Black dog, you blame me for your lifetime's pain, but I'm not your keeper, and my love was not a choke chain.
It's absolutely lovely. The Raven and the Blues on BFBS Radio 2. That's Chantal and the band The Cedars, except Chantal on her own, really. And that's called Choke Chain. If you're going to have to put a label on it, I suppose it's kind of called Americana, but that covers a whole range of different things. When you go to the States, do you think, to record, do you think just by being there and being in kind of the home of it is going to make you be different?
Ooh. I quite like the idea of sort of mental osmosis, like we'll absorb the whole of the
history.
The Nevada desert in our heads, or I don't know, I think it'll be quite interesting to do. But yeah, Americana is, it is, if you're going to classify us, that's pretty much exactly what we are. But I like that's an enormous range of things, because America's enormous and the wealth of its history is enormous. So.
No, I only raised that because about a year and a bit ago, we had Blues Caravan here, Ainsley Lister, Ian Parker and Eha Littinen. And they'd been taken by Roof Records to America, to Clarksdale, and also they were going to be doing Louisiana to New Orleans, except Katrina got in the way. But they just said that, you know, they'd heard about all of these places, they knew about Route 66, they knew about these small studios, but they just weren't prepared for what it was like when they got there and the whole feeling. And they came back like evangelists. It was really odd, you know. And they just said it had done so much for the way the album had come together just by actually being in kind of the home of it, if you see what I mean.
I think certainly for me, I'm not sure that America is necessarily going to make us... Well, certainly not going to make my playing feel more valid as Americana. I think what it would bring is more adventure for us. And it could be as well as going to Estonia or Russia and recording. Although the people in America I really admire from the point of view of what we're going to do is recording. And I really admire the sound that they achieve over there. And they have such a good touch with this kind of recording. But I think our actual music itself covers, I think, more than American roots. I think we've got a lot of North of England roots in our music. So,
if you take it back, kind of far enough, I guess.
Mm. Yeah.
It's not even that far. I don't even think it's really that far, but I do think we undeniably have American sounds to us. Mm. But as far as the way I feel about our writing, I don't think of it as specifically American.
Yeah.
But I'm undeniably influenced in many ways about music that has come out of America.
Would you see? I saw Bellowhead in the summer of this year, and they are a folk band, large folk band, but who actually have transcended folk and have moved kind of in your direction, if you follow what I mean. Mm. And in some ways, you are moving in the opposite way. Have you seen them work? Have you seen Bellowhead work?
No.
And it almost seems like there is a new genre of music which is growing, which is kind of influenced or sounds virtually what you're doing in a way.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm. I think it's quite interesting. I went to a work for a university and in the School of Arts, and the music department runs a series of free lectures, and I went to a lecture recently, a seminar series rather than lecture series, and it was a guy called Alan Moore, who is head of music, I think it's Surrey. He'll find out that I've got that wrong and sue me. But I think that's where he works. And the seminar was about, is the folk revival over? Not in a kind of negative way, but what is folk kind of moving into and becoming? And I think from our level, where we can see it in London in the live scene, there's been a sort of massive explosion of this kind of slightly indefinable,
yes,
Americana folk. What is it? You know, you could chuck a few accordions in, or you could have, or, you know, anything on stage, but there's a vague idea that it's acoustic rather than electrified, although, of course, a lot of it is electrified. So, and I think that's really good, because at grassroots level, it means that there's just so many other bands on the same wavelength as you. And that's a really good thing, whether that's happening in the States. Because I don't think country music certainly has never really been unfashionable in the States,
no,
or, you know, in that same sense. So I don't know what it'll be like atmospherically. Music-wise, it'll be quite interesting to find out.
Do you find as you leave London and the M25 circle, people's attitudes are different, ignoring the festival kind of things? But
We haven't really played. I think our exploration outside of London has pretty much been through festivals.
Through festivals, yeah.
And I think Ireland is as far as we've been. And the interesting thing about Ireland is possibly because they were not quite of this planet at the time. And we were there at 11 o'clock, maybe 12 o'clock at night, and there were still people in the field. I don't know if it was still raining then, but it was certainly wet and cold, and they were still dancing and cheering. It was great. So, no, is the attitude. I haven't seen a lot of attitudes change. It's everyone, you know, some people like us, some people don't, and
Although I get the feeling that we'd be accepted very well in places that have a really strong folk tradition, like Scotland and Ireland. I think, I'm Scottish, and I can certainly think of us playing in a lot of the places in Edinburgh that 10 years ago we'd only really put on straight folk. Mm. I'm sure they're booking bands like us now.
Yes.
I'm sure of it.
I think that is
the way it's gone.
Yeah, I think there's a show, there's a night called The Magpie's Nest in Islington, and we were meant to play there, and unfortunately we couldn't that night, and I went anyway. And the night seemed to be very, very traditional folk, and the guys had seen us play at the Secret Garden Party, so the people that put on the night. So I think they know what we sound like, and we don't sound very traditional, but they were very keen to have us on the night, so that kind of shows that they're very keen to mix very traditional folk with something a bit wider, if you like. Mm. And that's good. I think that's very, very good for us, I think.
Do the rest of the guys want to speak?
I don't know. I've just asked them, but I think they're happy to let us ruin our voices.
I'll just drone on until somebody tells me to shut up.
No, it seems a bit unfair because, although, you know, as you said, it's the four of you, but there's only two of you with microphones. Which,
we don't want your listeners to get the impression that it's still a two-piece. It's very much not a two-piece at all anymore.
It's a bit like our practices. Chantal and I will talk and talk and talk, and the only two people that say anything that's any abuse will be Pedro and Steve, and they'll say...
That's so true.
They'll say one sentence that sums up the night very well.
Very true.
We'll have a sentence from them that'll sum us up well, maybe later.
What should we do next musically? What are you going to do?
I think we maybe change the banjo and a song called Extrication Row.
Yeah, we'll do Extrication Row, which is one of our banjo songs. you send the steak cars for me? You don't even know my name. All I ever wanted was to be free. No trouble, no blues, no blame. Well, baby, I should have told you a long, long time ago. Wherever I come from, I always finish up on Extrication Row. Think of gold bangers. You fret so plain, don't you know that leaving ain't no crime? I might not have given you my heart, but I gave you a grand old time. And if you stand out on your porch steps, look out of your window now and then, you might see me on the horizon if I'm passing through here again. Well, baby, I should have told you
probably. I think I probably played that on the show about three times since I first got the CD from you about a year ago. Extrication Road, The Cedars, BFBS Radio 2. Because Chantal mentioned that she's got a job, and you all have to have jobs because there's business.
Unfortunately.
Yes. For the time being, anyway.
Yeah, if there's anyone out there who wants to pay us to do this.
How easy is it for you to get together to write, rehearse, record, just genuinely be a band?
That was quite funny. Chantal and I were talking about this the other day, and not us specifically, but there's a friend of ours, or more a friend of Chantal's, they're in a band, and they were talking about how much they rehearse.
They're a rock band, and they're very tight, but they're deeply obsessive about practicing sort of every 5 minutes, and we're a bit of a laughing stock because we just never rehearse. I mean, we probably do rehearse, but really not very much compared to.
I think if we haven't been playing for maybe a month or 3 weeks, and we've got a gig coming up, we'll meet up. But our main reason for meeting up is to write. And I think what Chantal was saying at the time when we were talking about it, what is really nice about it is that when we go live, we're not playing exactly the same thing each time. It kind of changes a little bit. And if I'm halfway through a passage and I'm going, well, I've missed that opportunity to go where I need to go, and I'll do something maybe slightly different. And that kind of helps keep it fresh.
I don't like the idea of being over rehearsed. And I think for this kind of music, it just doesn't work.
It sounds totally inauthentic.
I mean, there's a happy medium, quite a big happy medium, I think, in between. I think for a rock band, you have to be really tight, or it sounds like a mess. But I think for lots of other kinds of music, really, sort of over rehearsal just makes it sound dead and flat, and that's the last thing that we would want.
It also means that you've been terribly lucky, because to get four individuals who actually can approach it all kind of the same way. Because, you know, normally you might find one, either Steve or Pedro or somebody, would say, we've got to meet more often.
Yeah, it's really good that, actually. I mean, I think we're amazingly lucky to have had so few arguments, really, if any, in the band, which is great.
In terms of writing, You mentioned that's the main reason why you come together. Is it easy? Or is it something where you're saying, oh, it's the second Thursday, we've really got to do something?
No, I think when we are writing, it's very easy. And it's kind of difficult to say in the long term because we don't meet every week to write. So when we are writing, then I've probably had about a couple of months where I've got a million tunes in my head and I'm going mad, and it's you get them out. And I think that's so we haven't really had a problem writing yet.
I think it's like anything creative. Like if you're a painter or an artist, some days you just can't get it right and it won't come, and other days it's like, you know, like not like clockwork, that's a really bad phrase, but you know, it comes really easily. And I think it's the same. Sometimes it's harder than other times, and you know when to give up, I think. And sometimes it's easy. We've been quite lucky,
so if you do meet to be creative and it's just not coming, you just give up and go at the pub.
Well,
you know, because the more if it's not going to come, and you just end up putting more and more pressure on yourself and getting more and more agitated and anxious, and it's pointless because you're never going to create anything in that frame of mind.
Sometimes even when we've had a situation when we've met up to write and one of us had an idea, or there's been an idea that we kind of identified it maybe when we were rehearsing for a gig or at a gig, and we'll realize nothing's happening and then just chat for an hour and then have a couple of glasses of wine or something, and then suddenly something will come out at the end which we don't have time to finish.
we're quite fans of writing something in the last 10 minutes.
So that's kind of how that happens quite a lot.
For the Blind Willie McTell night, we only learnt the songs about 2 days
before, and we did it in an hour, and it was very nice doing it like that because it kept them very fresh.
We didn't. Well, I did. I don't know why I'm saying we. I'm the only person responsible for remembering lyrics, but no, I didn't forget the lyrics. It all went smoothly. It was great.
But I think also the music of Blind Willie McTell lends itself to this sort of kind of
chaos.
Yes, indeed.
We did. Yeah, sorry. No, carry on.
No.
I was going to say that when we were doing doing our versions of Blind Willie McTell, we realised that all of his songs seem to be in the same key and use the same chords. Because I was kind of going, oh, this is the same one.
He was the status quo of Georgia.
it was the trend, I was going to say at the time, right through, if you listen to it, I've got a 5-CD set of Jimmy Reed.
Yeah.
They're all the same, basically. Elmore James, you know. It's Dust My Broom of 60 different takes.
So the thing is, it doesn't sound the same when you listen to them. It's only when you come to play them you realise. And so I suppose that's a really great testament to how they sing as well, because they make them seem so different. And
absolutely.
I think somebody's going to write to us and tell them they're not all the same.
I didn't mean they were all the same.
I just mean that, you know, when you come to looking at the chords and how they're structured, they're very similar.
Yeah, I mean, it's not prog rock, you know. It's not massively experimental. Yeah. It doesn't need to be. Yeah.
How did you get involved with being invited to do a Blind Willie McTell sort of evening?
Through a guy in a band that we know that we'd played with before, who are called Extradition Order, who may be on the outermost fringes of your listenership. of everything. Yeah, they're certainly on the outermost fringes of sanity, but they're lovely guys, and it was a really good idea. And they got the guy, who I think is called Michael Gray, who's just written the first biography of Blind Willie McTell, to come down and read between the sets, which was just excellent. What a coup, you know. And got a lot of bands who, again, are sort of on the fringes, maybe, of this kind of music to do their own interpretations. And some were very traditional and some were very outlandish, maybe, but not in a bad way. And it was a really, really good little gig. And my boyfriend, who's a music journalist, came down and watched it and was really enthusing about it, sort of, what a good idea, and why don't you see it more often? And I think it's the kind of thing that happens in the blues, the folk community, that kind of thing. And it keeps the community, our community. It's a really positive thing.
What was quite nice is that the other bands that we're playing, is some of them were very on the fringes of what this, I suppose, genre of music, but Extradition Order, they're all, I can't really explain them, but they're a little bit punk, I can imagine.
Non-melodic.
but fantastic. I mean, he was singing Three Women, and Three Women
He's like
blues.
A white Mancunian guy.
And he's singing into this drum guitar he's got. It's kind of made out of an oil drum.
And it was a Castrol GTX oil drum.
But just fantastic there. And it, I mean, I think a couple of people who are listening were going, oh, my God, what is this? But for me, I just loved it. I thought it was fantastic. And how you can actually use that old history and make it your own in a way and from a song perspective.
Was any of the night recorded? Or
I don't know. We don't know. It may have been.
It might have just been one of those things that had to be there.
Yeah.
Legendary. Truly legendary.
I reckon we've got time for a couple more on this live set. Where should we go now?
We were thinking of playing another guitar song.
We were going to do Blood and Wine, weren't we?
Blood and Wine, yeah.
Which is the one that we kind of sound-checked for you earlier. Lost my heart in a game of cards. Fashioned a replacement from bottle shards. Stamped down my boots to get them on. Hitched a ride in the first red dawn. I got blisters on my fingers from catnap. The pills have brought my witnesses. Got a headache from the whiskey and the weather. You don't like what you hear, indeed, to me till I'm out of range. Oh, Savior, won't you send me a sign? Can't tell anymore what all is mine. Forgotten how to find the fortunes, since I can't taste the difference between blood and wine. But everyone I ever got close to tipped his hat, spiced his heels and said goodbye. And I left you standing on a dark street the night you thought you'd set me free. And it's all I can do not to tell you I pay for your bad hands on me. Oh, Savior, won't you send me a sign? Can't tell anymore what all is mine. Forgotten how to find them fortunes since I can't taste the difference between blood and wine.
Now to the hard commerce bit. Because you haven't got the album out, but you do have a sort of a kind of demo CD, sort of a, I mean, that's where I've been playing stuff from. So how is that best described? Is it's not your album, it's your...
It's something we've just used to get gigs, pretty much. And if people have asked for something, we've given it to them. We've mostly given it away. Mm-hmm. We did at one point think about signing it at gigs, and I don't know, it kind of... We weren't selling enough of them. I don't know how to explain it. We weren't really selling enough of them at gigs to make it worthwhile making a commercial thing. So I think it was nicer just to if somebody came up to liked us enough to ask for something, they got something in return. I think that was kind of nice with that.
Philanthropical, that. but they've just bringing up sort of Radiohead virtually gave away their album. Is the principle now that you use the album as a flyer, a publicity thing?
I think the new album, we'll definitely sell it.
Yeah,
I think because it's essentially needs to pay for itself. We're going to pay for it ourselves mm-hmm. mainly because we want to have a certain amount of control over what we record and how we record it and where we record it. And I think nowadays it's not worth selling your soul and selling your music in that way and losing control of it when you can pretty much get it together yourselves and then find somebody who wants to put it out for you.
I mean, you're very proactive in terms of keeping the fan base up to date with where you are, what's happening, what's new. And presumably that fan base is growing all the time, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not. We've got... American side seems to be very nice. I can't tell how many, but in America, but
where have they heard you on shows like The Raven and the Blues and things?
Possibly, yeah. And also MySpace has been very good.
Of course, that's right. Yes,
it's been very good, and I'm sure I have had a couple from Raven and the Blues actually, because if I see somebody coming through who's said hello, not the ones that just joined the mailing list, but somebody who actually writes to us, I'll ask them where they heard from us, and it's all over the place, really. And that's been pretty good. And it's not people who you traditionally think would be into our music. It's, you know, people 18, 19, 20 years old.
Which is a very positive thing.
Yeah, no, it's nice. Mm. I think what we're playing in this session, that's probably our... I suppose they're very bluesy sounding ones, because I suppose we're thinking it's a blues show.
On, yeah.
But
think Blood and Wine is particularly bluesy. I think Blood and Wine is our most Dylan-esque song.
Extrication Row.
Extrication Row, I think, has been a natural from when I heard it first, and when I got the CD from you, and I went through the CD. Colours and Extrication Row were the first two which I featured, and every time I've gone back, having run out of all the stuff, Extrication Row again, it fits so well. And so, yeah, I agree with you, Pedro. It is kind of. I mean, I don't think you've been strayed so far away. Again, when I see the remit or the width of music I play on the show, from Indian influenced Harry Manx and Doug Cox through to all sorts of other things along the way, to then electric blues. No, it all fits together. Mm. It's good music, basically. Mm. And I think with the broad church of music that I'm able to play, because the network allows me to, it means that people actually accept and know that, okay, if I play something they really hate, it's probably only one record before they get something they quite like.
Yeah,
and
yeah. Works.
I think probably if we had to think specifically blues, something somebody said to us when we played it, it was the Bristol Future of the Blues festival in Bristol, and there was a guy there. He must have been mid 60s, Pedro. And he came up to Pedro, and what did he say, Pedro? You say, because I can't. It's something to effect of where I can hear the old blues in what you do, and because I think what a lot of people associate blues with is they're laughing at me because I'm not going to stop talking.
we're laughing because he went, "I'll let Pedro say it," and then you just.
But is nowhere near the mic, and do you want to say it?
Well, he is now.
What did he say?
We're torturing Pedro.
Yeah. No, he came up to me, and possibly because Chantal was somewhere else and Jason was somewhere else, and I was
drinking,
the only one left.
Probably.
You were at the bar, so you're easy to find.
Jason will be talking to somebody.
Yeah, again, trying to get rid of me.
And he was just like a man who seemed to like his music, and he came to this. It was mostly quite young people in this place, and he came up with his walking cane and. And he was saying he really liked the music, and you can really hear all the old kind of blues influences, like Bessie Smith and all that kind of stuff. Mm. And he was quite excited to come up and say something about it. I think he probably wanted to say this to Chantal.
But you were the closest.
I was.
But I think that there's kind of an image that goes with blues, that it's what you hear and... certainly what I heard when I was a teenager and didn't really get on with was kind of the normal blues, the dun-dun and a kind of blues, and that's never really moved me as more being like the folk side of blues, I suppose. I think you played something on your show about Big Bill Brunsey, I think, and he said something quite interesting about folk and the blues, and saying that all music is folk music, and that's kind of how, I suppose, I'm not sure about we, but certainly I see it in that way, and listening to Lead Belly and all those kind of things moves me a lot, and it's if that's what people think is blues, then that's probably more where we're from, that side of it.
So, but your writing is English in the sense that you are the things you write about. You're not pretending to try to be Americans in any way.
No, I mean, I'm from South Africa, and Stephen's from South Africa. American. Stephen's from South Africa too, and Pedro's Portuguese, and Chantal's from Scotland. So I've got British parents, but I think it's as far as being English or British, if you like. Chantal is probably the most British.
Yes, but you are writing about your influences rather than pretending to try to be four American white kids.
Certainly not American. Yeah,
well,
I mean, that's what I was getting at.
But I mean, lyrically, there's lots of songs that don't have anything to do with that. But I think a lot. I mean, my dad sort of says a lot of the songs are about a kind of mythical West. And that's very true. If you know, something like Heart of Rags or Extrication Row, or something like that. And I'm very, I suppose, very influenced in terms of imagery and so on by Annie Proulx, who's my favourite writer, who, of course, doesn't just write about the West, but writes very evocatively of landscape and people in the States and so on. But you're just as likely to find, for example, in Chokecherry Blues, which probably sounds quite American. There's lines on that are straight from a Scottish folk song about someone being poisoned. But I think that's that cyclical thing of Appalachian blues came from Scottish and Irish musicians, so did bluegrass, you know, so it's this big cyclical thing. And I love that Lakes of Pontchartrain, which is sort of presumably still sung around the Mississippi Delta and whatever, came back to the streets of Leeds and Leicester as a Civil War song, but, you know, brought back by British soldiers who'd fought on that side. And I love that totally transcendent, geographically transcendent thing about music. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's almost quite frustrating when people, well, not frustrating, but it's obvious people are going to say it, but when they say, what part of America do, I suppose it's a compliment in many ways, but in other ways it's, you kind of almost want to sit them down and tell them, but
give
you
them
can't give them another lecture from Jason.
Put your mortarboards on.
There's one part of our audience listening now in Central America, in Belize, which has, to me, the most wonderful, varied musical culture, because it had the Scottish loggers who came in for the hardwood and brought their music. It had the French people came down from Louisiana and brought the accordions.
Wonderful.
The Mexican Mayan Indians brought in the guitar Mexican style.
Yeah.
And finally, the Garifuna, the black Caribs, who were the slaves who escaped.
Yeah.
Or so they weren't slaves, the potential slaves who escaped. Mm. And the music of Belize is all of these mixed together. It's just magical.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Talking of music, what we're going to... Oh, actually, before we finish, we need to, the MySpace page and all the other
of
things
course.
Where people can find you.
The main website is cedarsonline.com, and the MySpace is myspace.com. The only Cedars, although we're not.
Yeah, we discovered posthumous, that's the wrong word, but we discovered that there are a lot of bands called the Cedars.
Or the Cedar and the Cedars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But
so
you are the
confusing.
Only Cedars.
Yes.
We are the only Cedars.
and they can get the music from that site.
We did have a download, and I stopped doing that, but if somebody wants to write, if somebody writes to us and asks for some, we'll send them some, or give them a link, that's fine. But we stopped doing it after a while because we felt like it.
Take control and power.
Yeah.
It's been so much fun having you here.
Thank you.
What are we going to finish with?
This is a song that we've mentioned, and this, like many songs, it comes disguised as a kind of blues Americana song, but it's actually based on something like a 16th century Scottish folk song, which is miserable, like they all are, about someone being poisoned by their lover. A good blues subject.
Jack saw walking down the barbed wire road. Said, "Darling, I can help you carry that load." Jack saw walking down the barbed wire road. Said, "Darling, I can help you carry that load." Lover, won't you come home to me? Meet me under the choke cherry tree. And I'll take you to my house, pitch cedar and pine. Porch all covered with heart attack vine. And I'll make you up a supper, fried eels in a pan. Little oleander in your silver billy can. Lover, won't you come home to me? Meet me under the choke cherry tree. And I'll make you up a pallet at the foot of my bed, lest you need to rest your beautiful hair. In the grey morning those stars will shine, and the dawn will cleave your body from mine. And I'll wrap you up in linen, put the talons on your eyes, sit and wait for the pale sun to rise. Say I'll wait for you, Jack, till my soul is free. Meet me under the choke cherry tree. I'll wait for you, Jack, till you forgive me. Meet me under the choke cherry tree.
For the last 50 minutes, you've been listening to The Cedars live on the Raven and the Blues. And to all four of you, thank you so much for being our guest.
Thank
Thanks
you.
For having
thank
us.
You.
It's been great.